You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Westwave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Audio Nowcast. This is your host, Mike Rodriguez. Actually, it's not. Mike Rodriguez is not here this evening. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Rob Arbatier, and I'm normally one of the panel members here, but our fearless leader, Mike, is out of town for this week, and he asked if I would step up and fill this gold-covered throne that he sits on while we do this podcast, and I agreed. And from up here, I can see some of the members of our panel down below. They look so tiny. But let's see who's here with us this evening. Sitting next to me here, I have Mr. Scott Gershon.
Hello!
And then across the table from him would be Mr. Bobby Summerfield.
Hello!
Wow, that was sufficiently distant. Very nice. And our guest this evening is a person you should all get to know because he often engineers the podcast, but you don't get to hear from him too often, Mr. Andrew Chavon.
Hi. Hello.
He's very eager, very excited to be here. Now, this is going to be an interesting podcast this evening. We're going to be kind of free-form in it, but I have a few topics I wanted to introduce to the panel. But before I do that, I want to see if we can maybe reach Mike. He said we should try to give him a call. He's somewhere out on the streets of New York. And I'm going to, I know it. Oh, nicely done. Oh, boy.
Get away from my car.
Very nice. So I know he just got a new cell phone. So let's see if we can reach him on the streets of New York.
Being the sound effects guy, you know, it's every time you're in New York, you always have to hear sirens and ambulances. That's just New York. That slap.
Do you know, yeah, I'll tell you something. You know what really...
Oh.
Now, if you recorded drums, like,
if we can catch them.
Downtown Manhattan, wouldn't that be amazing?
It's ringing. That's a star.
Hello?
Phone brought to you by Verizon.
Mike?
Yes?
This is Rob Arbatier.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, you're on the Audio Nowcast. I think we really did catch him on the street.
I was having cheesecake because that's what you do in New York.
You're having cheesecake in New York.
Bring cheesecake back.
As well as not being able to hear our cell phone.
Oh.
Well,
your 6700 sounds pretty tinny here, but so does mine. So are you able to hear us?
I can hear you now.
Oh, that's much better. And you have company.
How's the podcast going?
The podcast is going great so far. I think it's actually our best one.
Well, hey, listen, I'm having a good time in New York, and let me tell you, one thing about New York is the sure is a heck of a lot of people out here.
Yeah, it's a funny thing about New York. Well, we're looking forward to seeing you in a couple weeks, okay?
Yes, and hey, you guys are doing a good job, but don't do too good of a job.
Oh, we're already doing too good of a job. Why do they mic the eyebrow? How does it pick up their voice?
Have you ever seen a Broadway show? The microphone would be wearing up there almost at their eyebrow.
What show did you see?
Yeah, what show did you see?
Oh, I saw a show called The
Eyebrow.
Drowsy Chaperone.
The Drowsy Chaperone?
Yes. It's actually really good, but let you guys get back to the podcast so that Andrew doesn't have to do a lot of editing out of this portion. I'm sure it's dragging the whole show down.
Oh, no, not this.
That's
are you kidding?
Hard so far.
Yeah, so far this is the high point, definitely. All right, well, we'll talk to you later then.
I'll talk to you guys later.
Okay, take care.
Bye, Mike.
Bye, Mike.
Bye, bro.
Okay, I thought he'd never leave.
can I get that plug in? I kind of like the sound of that, you know, just with the voice just makes it distorted.
It's just wonderful, isn't it? It's one of the best phone patches, you know, year 2006.
You'd by Verizon.
You'd think we'd have phone patches. Actually, it's by UT Starcom, but who's counting? All right. So that was just incredibly exciting.
Wow.
Cheesecake for everybody.
Well, at least we know Mike is alive and well on the streets of New York. And,
so he just saw a Broadway play, and now he's eating cheesecake.
Apparently so.
But the guy's micing up his eyebrow.
Yeah. We're going to have to find out more
about
that.
That's what we've learned.
Yeah, I don't think that was a microphone, but anyway.
Actually, they do sometimes. They mic them in strange places.
Well, usually they put it like over, like in the forehead.
The bridge,
but,
yeah.
But if it was the drowsy, what'd they call it?
Chaperone.
The drowsy chaperone, maybe it just kind of
it fell over because it was
drowsy. Veered off to the left, yeah. And you know. And
well, actually, I will, this wasn't what I was going to talk about, but I will say I finally joined the Bluetooth revolution and got one of those earpieces for my phone, especially because in L.A. or California, you're not going to be allowed to drive around holding a cell phone by the end of the year, I was told, when I bought my new cell phone. So I got one of those little Motorola earpieces, and it amazes me how well that picks up your voice and eliminates some outside
background noise.
It's pretty impressive. I mean, considering the thing is basically just sitting next to your ear, nowhere near your mouth,
yeah.
It does a pretty good job. And I was surprised by that because that didn't used to be the case. I mean, it used to be with a lavalier mic or right. Any kind of mic you'd use for that. You'd had to be right on it.
Yeah.
Do you feel silly at all wearing the earpiece?
Oh, I won't wear it except when I'm on the phone. I'm not going to walk around looking like a Star Trek character.
Now, why is it that people need to, you know, family, the guys with the kids.
And he has to have his blue thing
He's
on.
Got the earpiece on and he's eating dinner.
Right.
Yeah, I don't get that.
I don't get that either.
Well, it's like they're waiting to hear from Scotty or something that it's time to beam back to the ship. Let's get back onto topic here. Because actually, there were some things I wanted to talk about.
Great.
Mostly because when I get together with you guys, it's a way to get some free advice and, you know, why not?
Did you get over that problem then?
Oh, sorry.
Well, that's not for the audio now, Cass. One of the things I wanted to talk about, because it's one of the things that I do quite a bit for a living, and I know Bobby does too, is writing music to go with picture. And that's something that there are many, many composers in this town that do that kind of work. And by music for picture, I mean it could be commercials, it could be feature films, it could be television, it could be
internet, anything,
web stuff, it could be games. And actually, Bobby, what kind of – I know that we've done some similar kinds of work for in the TV promo world, but what kind of music for picture – have you been focusing on lately?
The last thing I just got done was the Desperate Housewives PC game. It's basically to picture. I mean, they're animated pictures, but they are pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty much like a TV show. Exactly. The only difference is that you have to score it in such a way that anything can go to anything at any time, depending on the player. So
that's the amazing thing that in my mind, separates doing music for games from everything else. Because in anything else, when you do a trailer or film or TV show or whatever, you
it's
basically
definitive.
Do the music and it gets mixed and then laid back to the picture. But in a game, it has to be completely dynamic. It gets mixed on the fly, right?
And it's three-dimensional. Because what you're not only are you doing different cues, but you've got different sections. You're going to have rhythm tracks, melody tracks, sweetener tracks, and those can go on and off in a multitude. So you can actually be streaming multiple layers of music that could be turned on and off at any time and combined in any way. It's kind of like acid on acid.
And your company, Scott, does music for not just commercials and films and stuff, but for games on different platforms, right?
Absolutely.
And how similar are the platforms, or do you have to work differently for each of them?
You know, it started
and what
off...
What are the major platforms now?
I mean, basically, it's PlayStation and Xbox. I mean, Nintendo's out there, you know. But right now, it seems like the biggest players that we're dealing with is actually and the PC. But the PC and Xbox have similarities. But on the old Xbox, you could stream 32 tracks, and on the PS2, you can stream like 2, maybe 6, if you're lucky. Now with the PS3 and the Xbox 360, the whole game has totally changed. You can do a whole lot more.
Well, if you were only able to stream a few tracks on the PS2, was it?
Yeah.
Where would the rest of the sounds come from? Could you be triggering samples?
It's a combination of having a disc recorder and a sampler. I mean, in the games for the longest time have basically been samplers, where you could you have a large RAM base, or you've got sample rates that are like 22/16 or 22/8 or 11/8, you know, and then it got better and went to 22/16, and now we're up to 44/1 and sometimes 48, but it pretty much stops there.
Mm-hmm.
And then what you do is you basically, per level, load in a series of sounds via packets into RAM and then be able to trigger those. Then you have streaming abilities. And what's starting to happen in gaming now is kind of the hybrids where you can put a little bit of the sound in RAM and then stream the rest of it, similar to what's happening with a lot of the synth players.
Mm-hmm.
TFD-ish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if you're working on, does your company do like a similar title for multiple platforms, or would it normally be the game is just for one platform?
No, a lot of times I think most of the game manufacturers are actually creating for a platform, and then they will then convert it to multiple platforms. We're doing a title now that it's interesting that when we did the bid, we had to bid, like, you know, this portion is for Xbox, this is for PSP, this is for the, you know, PlayStation 3. So they actually had different levels on different platforms. That's something unique that we've started to see popping up now.
So, Bobby, when you were doing this game recently, how do you work on it? How do you listen to the mix? I mean, you can never know exactly how your stuff's going to be mixed because it's different every time somebody plays the game.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, they would give you a scene of about 40 seconds long, and the direction would be the scene obviously does whatever it does. They would want the mood of the music to support the scene. In the event that the scene changes direction based on what the player playing presses a button or does something and goes down the scary route instead of doing, you know, a happy route or whatever, then the music that's playing has to change along with the player's direction. So there would be, we only had a two-track system, so we could only play two tracks at once. But what it would do is it would basically crossfade to another track. So if for example you're in a scary scene and the person's creeping around a house, and then all of a sudden they open the door and they see a bunch of flowers, you know, let's just say, then all of a sudden the music would change from being scary to being happy. As the player chooses to open the door to see what's behind the door and the flowers are exposed, the music automatically switches. The game knows, you know, once you press the button, okay, flowers are coming. The graphic comes in a little later, then the music changes with it. So it's basically got six or so options per scene, and a couple of sound effects as well, ready to play at any time. And depending on really on what the player does is determines what bits of the music plays. From a composing point of view or writing point of view, you just, of course, write something that tonality works. You know, obviously, if they want something to go here, and then, of course, you know you've got to go off a different direction. Needless to say, you do something that is key happy. You know, it doesn't sound like you go turn left or... Mm-hmm. In fact, make sure that if it does go left, it can also come back to the beginning, because sometimes they go, okay, now clear, let's start this game again, or repeat, and you have to be able to go all the way back to the beginning again. So it's kind of...
So are the two tracks, in your case, playing in sync all the time?
Yes, or? They would be ready to play in sync all the time. It has a little marker that goes down, but only one track is really playing.
Right.
So really, it's then that you don't hear them both, but one's playing and then one goes mute. I'm sure they're just muting. I don't really know exactly what they would do. They must really just mute one track, or voice stealing, I suppose.
So, Scott, on the other game systems, because, Bobby, the one you're talking about PC. Is PC-based, right?
Windows, yeah.
On the hardware game platforms like, you know, PS2 or whatever, how do you test and hear these things in context? Do you have test systems that you can play your code on?
Yeah, usually what happens, our approach when we do our games is we're actually building cues towards emotions and figuring out combinations. And a lot of the software that we're using will keep track, believe it or not, of the measures that you're on. So when you're building snippets, yeah, so you can do like 8 bars. So what happens is an event happens, let's say, within 8 bars, it will wait for the 8 bars to finish and then jump to a new cue. Unless we build it with stingers, where we'll throw a stinger in, let's say we're just keeping time, you know, something very suspenseful, and then bam, action happens, then what we'll do is we'll throw in a stinger, and then there'll be a music change that'll mask that difference. But it will make sure that it will actually hit the end of the measure.
And how do you test this?
You know, you test it by different scenarios. I mean, it's interesting when you do games, whether it be sound design or music, you can actually make little scenarios where, I mean, you can do something silly as showing the different levels of intensity on a word, saying, okay, harder, harder, you know, with numbers, and all of a sudden it will trigger. Because really what's happening is what's changing the music is different numerations that are occurring that are showing different intensity levels within gameplay. So it's just numbers. So, okay, we're in a 2. Oh, we jumped to a 7. Now we're down to a 4. Now we're to a 15. And you can actually just pop in numbers if you want or different
scenarios. But what hardware are you doing this on? Do you have, like, some version of a PS2 that lets you
Yeah, so then we call, something called DevKits. And what we do is we connect them usually to PCs, and they're actually controlling and talking to a DevKit, which is a developer's kit for, you know, either Xbox or PlayStation or PC.
I see. So you're actually hearing your stuff through a PlayStation, but instead of it playing off a PlayStation disc, it's playing controlled from the DevKit computer.
Yes, because sometimes, I mean, sometimes like with PS3 and even the early Xbox 360, we were using emulators on the PC because the hardware wasn't available. But now what's great is we can actually go into the game, especially with like the 360, put it into the game, actually play the game. I mean, ultimately, that's what you do.
Yeah, I would think you would have to.
You play the game, but sometimes you don't want to get through a certain level or do certain things to see. You know, you don't have to play it just to hear the one cue, so you can create scenarios that take you straight to that cue. Usually, cues are based on two things. Cues are based on action or environment. We're going into a new place. We want to establish an emotion, a sonic emotion, so we will then have a musical piece that will enter that area potentially.
One of the things you talked about in an earlier podcast is how the hardware platform games have actually gotten way more powerful than the computers that you're probably running these dev kits on, right? Because the dev kit's just running on
they're more powerful than our workstations.
Yeah.
I mean, what's in the 360 is mind-boggling.
So you have to test it on a 360 because even an emulator running on a PC or a Mac would not be fast enough.
Especially because one thing that's interesting is all of the mixing is happening inside the your console, which is your the Xbox or PlayStation. So if you want to have, let's say, somebody playing a violin in its source, well, if you move around the room in a 5.1 situation, it's going to move with you. So the violin can be in the surrounds, it can be in front, it can be left and right. It is moving that source material around a spatial area. Or it gets even crazier where, let's say you walk out of a room and someone's playing a violin and you go into the other room, it will then do reflections, obstructions, occlusions. It will then make it sound like it's coming from the other room. Mm-hmm. And this is all being built in to the systems. What happens is they're basically tool sets. That different that you have to basically license, buy, obtain, create, whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's not like there's one program that everybody uses. Every major studio comes up with their own tool set. And there's a couple ones you can buy. You know, Xbox has Exact, PlayStation has Scream. Then there's a Weiss just came out, Sentosa, and then FMod.
Actually, I want to ask a question off topic. Why do we wear headphones? We'll come back with that answer later.
We'll answer that in a later podcast.
So we can get that AM voice.
Before we leave the games, I just want to ask, what was the experience of doing a game like for you? And is it something you enjoyed?
Yeah, I did. I really did. I had two great friends as well help me out, Matt McGuire and Andrew Crestis. So it was quite pleasurable because it wasn't all like it, because it gets kind of heavy, you know, as regards revisions and or time crunches and stuff like that, because I had a bunch of other things going on. Yes, it was actually great. I thought at first it would be tougher than it was, and it wasn't. It was actually doing some music for promos and stuff like that and trailers often is far more complicated and far more taxing than ever a game will be. I mean, other than...
Yeah, because also in the game you're doing a longer time to express yourself and...
And you don't also have... You kind of also given them like an audio musical toolbox that basically the player chooses what to play. Mm-hmm. And just by the way, how I checked and see if they would work was I'd have like five or six stereo tracks innuendo and solo one of them, mm-hmm. and then just scroll up and down and see, because they'll always be in time, you know.
Sure.
So you just I'd only hear two voices at once because it doesn't have, you know. And I'd just say, okay, if you switch to here, okay, you switch there, okay, switch anywhere. And if that worked, then great. Then let's see if it looped, okay, great.
That's great.
That was my test.
So as the as the creative process of creating this music went on, though, you didn't feel the technology that it was going to be played back with was constraining on how you wrote it.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, we were able to do stuff that sounded better than we normally do for MP3 equivalent TV broadcast, because TV is so 9 dB dynamic range that it's you have to squash the hell out of everything to make it sound as loud as possible to emphasize what you're selling. With this, certainly Desperate Housewives, the music itself is, you know, sort of quirky and moody, so we were allowed to make it sound sonically better and have more dynamics. And and generally, I did audition all the stuff before I submitted it on. I've got a crappy old pair of speakers, it's like two satellites and a sub bass on my PC, and I literally auditioned on there and go, okay, this, you know. And I did do mastering. I just changed the EQ a little bit. I didn't go mad because the guys at the game is
they'll end up doing it,
but I didn't want to do their job for them. But you know, that was basically it was actually great.
It's interesting to me because I haven't done games recently. I did them years back when the technology was very different, and there's a chance I'm going to be doing some coming up soon, but. One of the things that, as I started scoring for picture years ago, one of the things that was always hardest for me is they would send, in my case, it was movie trailers would probably be the main thing that got me going in this direction. They would send me picture to score to, and there would be tons of mood changes, especially in a movie trailer, because we're happy, we're sad, we're scared, we're running, we're asleep, we're
7 seconds of this.
Dead, we're alive, yeah, exactly. And you have, you know,
sound design for 4 seconds.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's manic, but yet they want you. Generally, they've cut together a bunch of temp music that would never go together, and they want you to write a score that fits all the mood changes but also feels like one contiguous piece of music. And you know what? I've been doing it for years and years. That's still often the hardest part of a project, to basically capture 15 different moods with what sounds like the same orchestra or band or whatever, just happening to play a piece of music. You know, and let's face it, with today's sequencers, you can put in a bar of 3/16 and then a bar of 5/8 and all this stuff.
Unless you're using remix.
But you know, it is similar to commercials in the fact that if you think about building a large piece of music with lifts, and that's really the kicker. That if you know the old concept of lifts.
It sounds like the gaming world is actually a little more freeing because you could have 15 mood changes, but you could accomplish them by having written 15 long pieces of music that it switches between.
Exactly.
That to me actually sounds freeing instead of constraining.
It truly is. I mean, all you really do, as I said, is get the keys right so that this key would go to this key. If you can really screw yourself.
Because
you can't screw yourself. if this key works, or if that's really all it really is. You can do tempo changes, no law against that. It can be like that.
Actually, they're thinking of passing one.
They are.
Yeah, they're really going to be.
Is that before the telephone talking in the car? No, no.
No, that's
before the end of the year. That is no,
same bill, actually.
It is
a lot of pork in that one. So
interesting, though it is.
It is interesting and terrifying and wonderful. So I want to move on to another topic, which is, when we're all together. Not on the podcast, we always sit around and talk about, we never talk about what's going well or what we're happy with. We're always talking about what we would change or what we're not happy with. Right. And I thought it'd be interesting to open this up to the table. And it's one of the reasons I wanted Andrew to be here tonight, because we all have a different perspective on this. I want to go around, and I'm going to give you each a second to think about it. I'll go first. But I want you to think of the one thing in your daily life, professionally, that is still the hardest thing to do, and you wish some manufacturer would come up with a solution for it. Like the one thing you're always chasing down is the biggest problem, and Bob, you have to keep it to under 20 of them, okay? I can see you have a few ideas.
I was thinking about it all day.
So you get all day to think about it, and we just get like 30 seconds.
Yeah. Exactly.
Okay.
So start thinking fast. No, I mean, if you go back and think... Yeah, no pressure. If you go back and think about your daily work day, there is probably something you find, whether it's part of the creative process or part of the recording process or part of the mixing process or production or whatever. Or, Andrew, you're an engineer at a place. I'm sure you're constantly getting bugged. I'm sure you've solved the same problem many, 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 many times. And it's the kind of thing that if some manufacturer would think about it, they could probably come up with a solution for it. And mine, the one I came up with because it happened to be affecting me over the last week or so, is something that we touched on in the last topic a bit. And that is, nowadays there are millions of great pieces of software for loops. There are loop libraries. There are all kinds of programs that can play loops. And there are great virtual instruments that can play, like virtual guitarists will play guitar loops. And there's virtual bassist. And there's all kinds of drum generators. And these things all work great pretty much at any tempo, but only in 4/4. And there have been many times where I've been working on a trailer cue or whatever, that I'll need to put in a bar of 3/8 just to bridge a little gap, or I'll need to just put in a bar of 15/16 even, just because I need to, you know, they sent me a new picture and I need to tighten up the music a little bit, and the easiest way is to just remove a 16th note. I've discovered over the last week, as soon as you start messing with complex time signatures, you're basically completely screwed as far as virtual instruments and all these systems like Live and Reason and all these things that I love.
On you, I know.
And you're pretty much left high and dry. And I found on this thing I've been working on lately, I've had to basically take all of the loop generation stuff, all of the virtual instruments that have any kind of rhythm to them, and just track them as audio so I can edit them. But the whole virtual thing completely goes away. And it's the kind of thing that if the VST host programmers would just spend a little time or realize that it could be an important thing, they could sure save me a lot of time.
Yeah, you know, just I definitely agree with you. VST host programmers, if they would spend a lot more time on the tempo track, the conductor track, mm-hmm. in some programs they're called, just generally, because that's for people.
It's you.
Ah.
But I did switch the bloody ringer off.
It's on the cable, buddy. That's a good sound.
Exactly. I mean, the perfect example, scoring to a trailer. I mean, the tempo changes and the amounts of shifting that you have to do in those things. I mean, and I'm not going to steal your idea because I agree with it. I'll have to think on my own one because I have a few.
Oh, you're upset about plenty of stuff, I'm sure. We can think of something.
But yeah, tempo tracks. I mean, the conductor track has just got to be made much more groovy than a lot of them are not that.
I found now the switching tempos, most of the plugins react to pretty well. You know, in the last couple years, everybody's pretty much following. If you're in a VST host application and it's speeding up and slowing down, for the most part, the plugins will speed up and slow down. That's working pretty good. You know, it varies from plugin to plugin. But if you put in a time signature change, you just completely screw yourself. I mean, it's unworkable. And right now, there truly is no solution. So I'd have to say, if the manufacturers could, if they would just put themselves in the seat of the composer for anything other than a, you know, a 4/4 backing track. Yeah. I mean, for that, it's fine. And I realize a lot of this stuff comes from Germany and, you know, that trance.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, for the kind of music that's so popular in clubs over there, the software is perfectly tailored. And if you were to throw in a bar of 3/16 or something, everybody would break their ankle on the dance floor. You know, they're just not going to do that.
Yeah.
But maybe they should start, because it would sure make the tools a lot cooler.
Yeah, that's true.
So that was my little bugaboo all day that was driving me crazy. So who would like to go next? Anybody have anything that pops up in their daily life?
I think for me, I was giving it some thought. I think, strangely enough,
I bet it has something to do with mixing, doesn't it?
It does, actually. No, you know what it is that, you know, they've worked so hard at creating low latency on instruments. But one of the things that I think is difficult is when you're dealing with any type of mixing situations, plugins, dealing with computers. I sometimes, you know, I remember when I was working with synchronizers and mixers and having actually two hands going at once, I could move fast because I was always a couple steps ahead, just arms flying. And I find on computers, you actually really have to slow down, like way slow. You hit a key, you wait for the window to pop up, then you hit another key and you do that. And I want to go blah, 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 blah. And you just can't do that because mm-hmm. you got to wait for Windows to come up. You got to wait for them to close. Macintosh doesn't have keystrokes for everything, or Pro Tools doesn't. So, like, I've just bought an iKeys. Is it iKeys?
X-Keys.
X-Keys system to help me do that. And it gets faster as it learns.
What is that? Is that the dedicated button thing?
Yeah, it's got like 64 buttons. So now I can.
Generic buttons, though.
It's the PI engineering one.
Oh, yeah. Right, okay.
And what you can do is you just hit a button, boom, and all of a sudden I got plugins popping up and down. And I, you know, need to load picture, because a lot of times when I'm jumping from reel to reel and I want to, you know, put a new picture in or get something in, everything just takes a little, you know, pause, yeah. Opens up, click. So you actually have to slow everything down. But when I was doing all my work in the analog state, I could fly. And I do miss those days where you're just waiting for things to come up, waiting for them to close.
And it's not that the technology couldn't work that way, right?
I mean, sloppy programming.
I guess. I mean, it's, you know, I think that they're not optimizing because they've so, you know, you got so many gigs of memory
now. You know what? One of my big things that I'm always on about is I wonder, because I use an awful lot of different kinds of software, as we all do. I am constantly wondering if the people who wrote this stuff ever have to use it to earn a living. Because I think if they had to earn a living using the software they were writing, it would work differently. I really do believe that. And I believe it for the problem I brought up about the time signature changes, and I believe it from your mixing perspective as well.
And even just design,
if they were being paid to get a job done quickly, all of a sudden the windows wouldn't have to open. But
even as designing, it's like sculpting, where you take a sound, you want to – it's the same thing also with music. You know, when you're creating a kind of a texture to it, you want to build a filter. Or no, you want to try a different filter. You want to put this on. And you just want to have a certain workflow that – like, I mean, I've seen you type, Rob, and you're a very, very fast typer.
Imagine, it's the only sport I'm good at.
Yes. So imagine if you have to go type, 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 type per letter. It's like going blah, 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 blah. Because you're typing in phrases. I see when you type, you're actually typing almost in rhythms and phrases because that's what you've learned. Mm-hmm. Well, same thing in audio. When I'm designing and I want to take a sound, pitch it down, reverse it, manipulate it, stretch it out, blah, 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 I know, my head knows exactly where it wants to go. The hands know where they want to go. I've just got to wait. And for me, it's kind of an instrument that's just a very slow latency, a slow
and
response.
I should clarify for anybody listening that you're not using old, slow computers either.
This is all state of the art.
State of the art stuff.
I definitely agree with you 100%. I've made it a quest of mine for the last 8 or 9 years to just absolutely not use a mouse. I hate the mouse. I think it's a stupid instrument. I mean, you know, whatever. Unless I'm drawing. Using keys and applications and stuff like that. And that's one of the reasons why I got off the Macintosh. From the Mac 922.
Windows is very good at that because you can assign anything to anything.
Excellent. Right. Excellent.
Well, that's why I just picked up Quick Keys, because the things that DigiDesign doesn't support on a key,
right,
I'm putting now on X Keys to hopefully speed it up.
Right. Quick Keys does definitely. It's a great little program. A great little program. I think the whole 10-point X on the Macintosh OS just started to slow down a lot. 922 was much more snappy. Not to get into this, but it was from an operator's point of view. You could hit buttons and it would respond immediately. But now it's like feels like you're on the internet all the time.
But do you realize that as users, we're now finding workarounds to make the stuff work the way we need it to work in our daily lives, and the manufacturers. I mean, I've spent, as I know Scott has and I imagine Bobby has, I've spent many, many hours with software designers from the manufacturers in my studio with them watching the way I work to try to take that workflow and put it in a piece of software, you know, that's going to make the work easier for me because the way I work is a lot the way a lot of other people work. There are a lot of companies out there that get their software to the 90% cool mark and then – you know, there are some virtual instruments where you can't sequentially step through the sounds. Every time you want to load a new sound, you have to click on a menu.
Dude, those virtual instruments get fired.
Yeah, well, they do get fired. Unfortunately, they have some cool sounds.
Right, you've got the Chaos Pad.
Mm-hmm.
You know the BPM button.
Yeah,
it sends out program change. That's what I use it for.
Really?
It does.
Sexy as all hell.
Wow.
I just go click on it and go dick, 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 bird.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. That's one of the things
there's a free tip for everyone.
There's a free tip. Anyway, we won't even go there.
Is that MIDI controllable?
It is, both
it
in
is
and out.
MIDI, yeah.
Oh, actually, because we could probably do that on the Innovation.
It's also very nice for, we'll get into that later on. But it's,
yeah.
The nice thing about that knob is it's notched. That's why I say it's dick, 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 dick. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
The BPM knob.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's really good for programming.
Get that thing out of the closet. Yeah. All right, so we still haven't really given Bobby or Andrew their forum, but I think we need to take a break because Mike told me we're supposed to take a break about now, and I don't want to get yelled at. So I'm just going to hose down the panel, and we will be back shortly.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. I'm your special guest host, Rob Arbatier.
And doing a fine job he is.
Thank you.
He sounds a little bit like Mike though.
Actually, he's got Mike's dress on,
he's
too.
He's looking a lot like Mike.
Well, I'm sitting on the throne. The power does go to your head after that. You guys can see me up here, right?
Barely. Those bright lights.
Do the robes look good?
They do. It's very good. Yeah.
If I go all the way up there, I'll get a nosebleed, you know.
That's true.
Wait, I can't see you. Oh, there you are.
Here I am.
Hello.
That's me waving.
Hello.
Use the Altavir plugin for it. You know.
So we were going on endlessly about what I was finding an interesting topic, which was, before we go back into this, let me give the email address.
Absolutely.
I'm so wrapped up in this conversation. I keep forgetting to do that. I was supposed to do it in the last segment. We, here at the Audio Nowcast, we would love to hear from you. We're now heard in many different countries. I don't know what the current count is. Mike would know.
Something like 13.
No,
maybe?
I think it was up. It was like 17 or 18, I think.
Little internet cafe in an African village somewhere, you know.
And
they got it by mistake. They were looking for like a porn site and they got Audio Now. Oh.
Sex Nowcast.
Sex Nowcast.
But apparently Pluto doesn't count as a planet anymore.
Yeah, so that's us. We've lost that one. Yeah.
Yeah, we've lost Pluto.
And now there's what? Two others now? Xena?
Yeah, Xena and some UB313 or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Washington. Oh, no. Anyway.
Welcome back to the PlanetCast. Well, anyway, we love hearing from all of you, and we love answering your questions. We love seeing your comments. So you can always email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Again, that's audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Where is that? What was it?
For those of you who have the internet in your lives, that's how you reach us.
Didn't you say it three times, though, for people to remember it?
Audio@friggin' nowcastnetwork.com.
Was that the rule that you have to play things three times?
Then you also have to say, and that's not all.
And that's not all.
You have to.
Yeah, and
we need Billy Mays here.
Hi, Billy Mays here. We're at Audio Now.
Sorry, carry on.
Say audionowcast.com. Audionowcast.com. Audionowcast.com.
So we'd love to get your questions and comments. And if you'd love to actually, if you'd like to be a member of the panel here, we're going to be inviting some outside guests to do that as well. So please send us an email. All right, back to the topic we were talking about, which is problems we encounter in our daily lives that the equipment manufacturers or software manufacturers could actually make better if they would just spend a little energy working on these problems. And I wanted to go to Andrew, who has a different perspective. You work as an engineer, right?
Yes, right now as a systems engineer, pretty much. And I was just thinking when you asked that question, you might have to bear with me for a minute as we get my idea. Mm-hmm. Out there. Okay, a piece of software that all the different hardware and software manufacturers can kind of upload the details, the inputs and outputs, what their software or hardware does, and it all goes into like a modular kind of interface, like a modular software where you can build audio systems, like post-production systems or, you know, music-making systems for your own home or for studios.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you'd have all these different icons, and each icon has the ins and outs, the kind of interface that it uses, you know, light pipe, AES, audio, analog, whatever it has.
Mm-hmm.
And you can build systems within one piece of software. So if anyone has any questions about what they want to buy, they have a piece of gear, they could buy this software and they could build the system that they would need, and they would know what would work and what would not work because it would allow you to do certain things and it wouldn't allow you to do certain things like a modular synth software would allow you to do.
So in your daily work, how would this save you? Do you have people who are putting things together that shouldn't go together? Or
I get calls all the time through freelance from people that have problems. We should clarify also what it is you do.
You're systems engineer systems at a post-production facility, right?
Exactly. I also do a lot of freelance. People want to put together home studios or people that are just, you know, Logic musicians that have Logic. They have pieces of hardware. They don't really understand the ADAT interface. They don't understand word clock correctly, and they just want a good system. There could be a piece of software that helps them to create their own, you know, system that they want to create.
Interesting. So do you get a lot of calls from people who are putting together things that shouldn't go together?
I do.
And actually, I will say I'm guilty of one thing. I ran into a thing with ADATs a few weeks ago where I had some devices that had a stereo light pipe out and other devices that had an 8-channel ADAT light pipe in. And I didn't realize why I wasn't getting signal. And I would sometimes get a little bit of signal and things were very flaky. And it had just never come up in my life before that I had to worry about two-channel versus eight-channel ADAT light pipe. And it would have been nice to have a reference.
That software would have worked out really well for you, Rob.
It would have. Why
had it existed?
Why haven't you gotten someone to design?
I don't know. This is the first time I've even thought of it, so I'm sharing it with all of you.
What I mean, I've seen different manufacturers have had configuration software for their own
exactly for
devices.
Yamaha, for example.
Right,
they would have their own configuration software that would have all the ins and outs. But this would be, you know, when something is released, they go ahead and send this company a little plugin, and it's always being updated. This program's always being updated with new software. And it understands all the different operating systems and all the different platforms. And I think that would be nice. It would make my job easier, and it would make other people's jobs of being musicians and composers and whatever easier.
So what kind of calls do you get when – is it usually like – if it's a freelance call, is it usually like a composer who's trying to get Logic to integrate with – outside gear or what?
For example, it's someone who has a whole bunch of synthesizers and whatever sequencer they have and don't know how to get them to work together. Mm-hmm. And they might have a mixer. They just want to learn the best workflow. And they're also asking, you know, what kind of interface should I buy? How many inputs and outputs do I need? I need to get into my mixer. My mixer has – they need a certain amount of inputs and outputs for their gear. And what gear should they buy to maximize their
mm-hmm. –
their stockpile.
It's actually a cool idea.
Yeah.
Someone should do it.
Someone will do it.
It'd be a lot of work, but it would be great.
Oh, it'll happen eventually.
Yeah, it would have to be someone like from the industry itself, not from any one manufacturer. It would have to be someone who, like us, is just using all the the different kinds of stuff, and you would just have to stay on top of it. But it's true. With all of today's consoles, like digital consoles, in the old days of consoles, you would just buy a giant console that had so many line-ins, so many mic-ins, you know, it was all pretty logically laid out. But because of the way DSP gets allocated in a digital console, I mean, even going back to the O2R, you know, you'd get so many monos, so many stereo inputs, and then you might get, I don't remember the exact specifications, but you might get two D to A's that then have the highest quality D to A, and then one D to A that's not quite as good, which they figure you'll just use as a Q send. You know, you couldn't even be guaranteed that all of your outputs would sound the same because they would use different D to A converters to try to save money on the outputs they thought didn't have to be as high quality. If there could be some software that knows about all this that could help you configure a system, because I found out about that in the early O2R days. I forget what it was. It was like the AUG sends weren't as good quality as the Stereo Master out. It was like they had
yeah,
an 18.
They never want to tell you that stuff, though.
No, but it was in the.
It was common with a lot of consoles, actually, analog consoles as well.
Really?
For many years, they had like they would put all their eggs in one basket for financial reasons. Really, they would make balanced outputs for like the left and right bus and the group outputs
because they thought the sends were going to reverb wasn't going to be that high fidelity.
Right, anymore. And then they would have auxiliary sends would be unbalanced or maybe. A lot of big consoles. You'd be surprised. Some really nice, well-named consoles are like they're running unbalanced, all sorts of things. I remember one of the things was a Mitsubishi X850 digital tape machine. The outputs were unbalanced. It's kind of funny.
Really?
Yeah, XLRs out, but they were unbalanced. Not that that means much, but it, you know, it's
you would just figure you're spending.
Yeah, you know, I think $180,000. $180,000.
But you know what you were saying is I was reading an article not that long ago, and they were talking about network technology of the future. That they're working on, and one of the things they're trying to create now is smart appliances or smart things that instead of all the cables going to a single hub or single processor, each apparatus or piece of material will kind of think on its own. So when you bring a new piece of gadget into that area, into that zone, it automatically can talk to each one individually. So if you take out any piece, it still runs. So there's actually no hub. They're all talking to each other at different points. Yeah, so it's kind of what the next technology, because they're also trying to make smart houses. So like you bring a toaster in, your house goes, oh, there's a toaster. There's not a single brain going, there's a toaster, but everybody knows that a new thing came on. And what will be interesting is a byproduct of that will probably be the music business, where all of a sudden you bring a new piece of audio gear into the room, it'll be a smart piece of gear, and it'll automatically say, oh, you're a blah, blah, blah. okay, now let's route you, kind of what we're doing now with Cycle 74 and Kima and all these things, where we're taking virtual modules, putting it together. Eventually, we might be able to do that with hardware.
Yeah. What's Cycle 74?
Or wireless, you know.
Cycling 74, the plugin company?
Yeah, the...
The plugger?
Yeah, the one you can do the all the virtual stuff.
Yeah,
and,
okay, okay.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
I mean, but getting back to Andrew's point, even with that newest technology, if I then want to know gain structure-wise, what's the coolest way to take a signal from my super-duper new digital console and run it through the great filter on my old Mini Moog, you know, what's the right way to do that? You know, what kind of input impedance does that Minimoog filter input have? It would be great if there was a massive database of that kind of stuff, because a lot of it right now is just trial and error.
Yeah. And so it should be.
You know, that's fine until the project's due in 10 minutes.
I mean, for the analog side of the world.
We'll do a neural link at AES, and everyone just downloads what they know.
Cool, that's good.
Yeah,
I'm good.
I'm good with that. So, Bobby... Let's turn the tables to you now for a moment, because we've actually shared a lot of the same pain when it comes to this technology.
Torturous stuff.
But I figure I already blurted one out, so why don't you...
Mine's more general, but the one thing, the one by name I'll name that I, every morning I use it, every day I use it, and I hate it dearly, is Windows. Windows operating system.
Well, at least you've picked something easy to fix.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I think we should just really start. It's just terrible. It's like I need not to go on. I mean, but I love Macintoshes, although I don't use the Macintosh anymore because I think their operating system's just on the cusp of getting ready for me to use again. But the, Windows XP is one large hunking patchwork job. You know, it really, really is, and it's just so hard to use every day. I think, you know, I'm just installing drivers. Like, oh no, here we go again. Okay, I have to click this. I don't continue anyway. It's just an unhappy environment, and they really do need to fix that.
Do you realize we were two versions away from DOS? I mean, you think there's XP, there's Win. I mean, it hasn't grown compared to everything else has grown.
Yeah, it's I mean, you know, the trouble is because there's so many people using it, they can't change so much. Yeah. You know, there's people still using Windows 98 and 95 because it's just too much money for them to update, and they can't be down the downtime, you know. So, I mean, they've got a massive problem on the hand. And
they're trying to come up with Vista right now, just they can't get out the door.
Hopefully they'll get it out the door. Well, I mean, you know, XP works, but, man, it's an ugly interface.
And there are certain limitations. I agree. It's definitely patchworked. And the things like you can only have unless you're using proprietary drivers, you can only have 32 MIDI ports.
I mean, it's old, so it's obviously, I suppose, it's easy for us now and look at OS 10.4 and go, look how nice this is. They've got audio units. They've got their whole MIDI thing going on. But of course, they've had the luxury of building their own hardware. Macintosh, Apple have had they have the luxury of building and controlling their hardware, and obviously building software. And they don't have as many people telling them not to do certain things. You know, they're a small, nimble company, but surely Windows, I know they do, ripped off Apple in the past. They should just rip off some of their innovation and go, man, let's be as good as these guys.
Part of the problem is the Windows tradition is not to leave old customers high and dry whenever possible. So there's so much legacy code so that old software will stay compatible. And there's definitely an argument for that, but when you're doing hardware-intensive stuff like audio, video, music, whatever, it's very hard to be streamlined and cool and cutting-edge and not alienate old clients.
Even if they got some better designers on it. Yeah. I mean, whoever – I mean, even just the graphics. I mean, it's but the graphics on a Macintosh, on a PC is like, man, what is this?
But you know what I think?
It looks horrible. It really does.
But there's a certain truth.
Right?
You look at
but I'm more worried about what's coming out of the speakers.
I'm myself, too. I completely. But I'm just saying, you know, even the thing, it looks terrible. It looks like...
But you look at the commercial, you know, the Windows Mac commercial where...
it's hilarious. Know,
but there's a certain truth to it.
Oh,
that Windows was really based and then has become tools for different people, but it was basically
business.
Your business machine.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, the Mac, I mean, you know, I've got both. And one thing that I've started doing, you know, I've got a 3-year-old now almost, and so I'm doing the home movies. So, you know, I was going in, I'm looking at the PC software, and the first thing I'm thinking, what's going to work and what's not going to work?
Yeah.
And then what won't work enough to call Rob enough to fix it? So then I figured instead of doing that and waiting for it, I got, was it iLife?
Done.
put it in, put the fire wire in, and went, oh, you've got the video recorder, camcorder recorded. Do you want to load it? And there's one button, load. Boom.
No contest.
Everything's done. And also I'm like, wow. Now all of a sudden the Macintosh is starting to answer my just daily thing, you know,
absolutely,
daily needs.
Absolutely. I just hope Macintosh... And I love the Macintosh OS. I love 9.2.2 and I like OS 10. But I hope they do give back to tweakers the tweakability.
Yeah.
I really do, because I love just being able to press a button when I've got my family around and I want to do iLife. Oh, do it. Here we go. Great. But when I do want to tweak around with it and see what I can do and how I can push things like you can do in Windows before it crashes, you know, that's what I do hope Macintosh does start to do.
Right.
And I do really hope that they get away from this. I don't know about you guys, but it feels like the OS X on a G5, I still feel like I'm on the internet. It's like everything's so like closed window. It goes, you know, it's got all these. I mean, of course.
It's all this user prettiness that is just
chomping
it down.
Well, I think the thing, the problem we were talking about before with the Mac is that everything's so mouse-driven that sometimes you could type way faster.
Absolutely.
And it's like, can I get some keystrokes here?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're just now starting to get around that.
That's exactly why. And after 9.2.2, I said, woohoo, that's scary. I mean, you know.
I don't know about you guys, but I don't get excited when I hear there's a new version of Windows or OS X coming out. I get just frustrated and terrified because it just means I'm going to have to spend a lot of money and buy a faster computer to end up
being able to be doing
the exact same work I'm doing now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it takes a long time before.
Mactel Pro Tools. Mactel Pro Tools.
Well, yeah. I mean, let's see what that's going to be like.
PCIe. Yeah. I mean, no, we just, you know, we've got, I don't know, 200-300 Pro Tools systems. And then they go, hey, we got Mactels, and they're all PCIe.
And you're supposed to say hooray.
And there's an accountant and an engineer that just pretty much just, you know, collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hey, okay, we just need another $2 million to match the other $2 million for last year.
Yeah, let's spend $2 million to end up with the exact capability we have now.
Yeah.
With the possibility of upgrading more in the future. But for right now, we're just ending up where we're starting and we're spending a lot of money.
But you know what's interesting, though? You're very much an analog. And one thing that's kind of odd.
Scott is speaking to Bobby.
Hello.
I have to give the visual reference.
Okay. And I'm moving hands.
He's pointing.
He's
picking up a stick. I don't understand. Oh, he's showing me. Very good. Oh, is that your stick?
Analog gear. You buy it. You've had it. It works great. You've had it for 15 years. It's a wonderful piece. When you buy software, you buy it. You lease it until it stops working because you've got a new operating system. Then you pay more. You buy something you keep spending money on.
I will say I have yet to have Steve Jobs sneak into my studio and make any of my old synthesizers obsolete. He has not been able to do that.
No, yeah. Definitely not. That's but, yeah.
All right. So we've exhausted this topic
with our
exhaust?
No, yeah. I mean, just basically Windows. I mean, if basically, that's my two cents.
Yeah,
I'm more of a fan of Windows than you are.
Yeah,
partially because in all my years with Stevie, it was always the operating system that I could make quick and non-visual for him, and so I became pretty adept at it.
I remember
myself
getting my ass kicked once for Stevie when I stood in for many years ago before I think I ever met you.
Yeah, before we met,
he was running Cubase. And I got a call and said, they need a Cubase operator to help Stevie out for one night session or two night session. So I said, sure, I'll go down there. They forgot to tell me it was on a PC. I'm like, oh. And the power button is where?
And they weren't so similar PCs at Max.
They were.
The software.
And 95, I think it was. Must have been Windows 95 then at that stage.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Well, the thing is, my frustrations, I mean, you know, I am a techno nerd like all of us. And if there's something wrong with my PC and it crashes, I feel like there's something I could do to fix it. When my Mac crashes, which I have to say is just about as much as the PC. I mean, and
no.
It's usually related. Oh, definitely, because it's all about custom hardware. If you don't put custom hardware in either system, they're both pretty robust. As soon as you start messing around with very complex setups, I mean, I have very complex Pro Tools setups and everything else. Once you start messing with complex hardware issues, none of these things are nearly as solid. And what I find is, when the PC crashes, I feel like I have a chance of fixing it. When the Mac crashes, it just presents me with like a frowny face,
right,
or you know, it just
I do
stares
love,
at
I
me
do love the Windows blue screen though. I do love the 90F32-976442 along the bottom, all off the core.
I'd rather see that than just you know the Mac just just the spinning beach ball of death forever.
Definitely. I love the under-the-hood ability of a Windows system, absolutely. And if I knew what I was doing, I mean, really, I'll be honest, if I knew better what I was doing on Windows, I possibly would like it better. But
I am interested. I mean, I'm not excited to go out and spend $1 zillion to change all my systems over, but I am interested to see whether the MacTel Macs end up fixing these problems or just making it where you can crash simultaneously in two operating systems. You know, I the jury is way out on that still. It's way too early.
Definitely. I'm dying to get back to a Mac land. I'm just waiting for that beach ball. They should get rid of that beach ball. That's one thing they should definitely get rid of.
The no beach. One's ever happy to see the beach ball. No, it's ruined it for beach balls everywhere. Yeah.
There's been mass murders of beach balls.
Yeah, swads. Spinning wheel of death. All right, we're starting to get long on the tooth here on the podcast, but there's one other thing I wanted to touch on because I just think it's fun and interesting, and that is, Scott, you just did a...
He is fun and interesting. Oh.
He is fun and interesting, especially when there are guns around him, which there were recently. You did a recording shoot for a movie you're working on. Why don't you tell us a little bit about
that? Right now I'm working on a movie called Shoot 'Em Up.
All right, that's enough. So I hope you can know.
Thank you.
No, talk about it.
It's Paul Giamatti, Clive Owen, Monica Bellucci, and it's about guns, hey, you know. And what we did was we wanted to record actually bullet buys and ricos. So we went out to our friendly neighborhood gun range out in the middle of nowhere at a wonderful 107 degrees.
Nice.
And we got there at 7 in the morning, set up 25 microphones over 100 yards apart. And we had Shep's, we had B&K's, we had Neumann's. We bought a whole bunch of, was it Marshall 990 MXL mics because we figured at $50 a pop, you know, if we lose a couple or we shoot a couple, so what? Compared to the, you know, $2,000 Shep's and, you know, and we had 191 Neumann's. It was a huge amount of microphones. We used a combination of 744s, which are sound devices, Divas, Fostex FR2s, and we all went out in the desert. And what we ended up doing was, it was kind of challenging because to record bullet buys, you have to find a way to suppress the sound of the gun. Otherwise, the gun becomes so loud or the bullet goes so fast that you can't hear the bullet buy. So we ended up using, first thing we ended up using were muskets.
Ah.
And we changed the grain load of how much gunpowder we were going to use. So it's basically like taking an 8-cylinder car and basically running off of one spark plug and, you know, just kind of chugging along. So we did this, and we had little wood things that we built to theoretically cover our microphones as we were blasting holes in them. And I got a pair of vintage Sheps that are my loves. And for some reason, that was the one that they kept going after because some of the bullets were kind of like you couldn't control. Then what we ended up doing is we bought a gravestone and brought that in the desert. And it's not that big, but...
Just in case one of the sound crew got hit, you mean?
Or? Yeah, no, yeah, you know. Yeah, just bury him there, you know.
What's his name again?
Jack. We don't know where Jack is. Yeah. But it's amazing. This little stone is about 2 feet by 3 feet and weighs 200 pounds.
Jeez.
So it's really small but really heavy. So we dropped it down. We used a silencer machine gun, and we started basically taking 9mm subsonic slugs and shooting them off of the gravestone. And then they pretty much went everywhere. And actually, the recordings we got were amazing. We recorded at 9624, and we actually didn't lose any mics, but we came within... Oh, well, several times it came within about 2 inches of my Shep's. But,
yikes.
Yeah. Now, the weird part is the MXLs, which were sitting in the middle of the air on boom poles.
Hoping to get hit.
Hoping to get hit. They never even got close. Aww. But the ones behind the wood, the really good mics, were the ones that were getting, you know, definitely challenged. But we had windstorms going on, and we basically recorded from 7 in the morning till about 5 at night. And, you know, here's a bunch of, you know, brisk young men out in the desert, and pretty much at the end of the day, we felt like old men just walking. And because we had to get all 100 yards of cable, you know, it was huge. But it was an amazing shoot, and we do this, and we'll probably use that library now for the next 15 years. It's one of those classic stuff that's hard to get, but it took us a long time to figure out how to get the sound.
How do you make sense out of, I mean, you come back with a huge number of recordings in different formats, different track layouts and stuff. How do you make sense out of it into a library that you could actually refer to?
Well, actually, everything was recorded to DotWave. And what we're going to do is we put it together. We all slated it with megaphones. So it's kind of, yeah, so we've got, you know, okay, you know, okay, this is, you know, gunshot with something load, blah, 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 you know, rolling, you know, fire in the hole, you know, and off we go.
That was pretty
good,
actually.
You know, and then we would take that, we sync it up, and, you know, we're 25 tracks wide, and we can then listen to the
what
different.
What were you recording to? Sorry.
We're recording to Sound Devices has something called a 744 that is four tracks.
Ah, okay.
And Divas 10 tracks. And we must have had probably about 10 different recorders.
Okay.
And the reason is it's kind of like music in the fact that every microphone had a different placement and a different
characters.
Color. Yeah. So, and we weren't, you know, this is a multi-camera shoot just with audio, and we don't know what we're going to get.
Right.
So we experimented, and we had PZMs on the ground that we were shooting over.
I love PZMs. They're great microphones.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
They're so overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And, you know, the sound pressure, we had very, very, like the 4007s, B&Ks, that takes, you know, stupid amounts of sound pressure. So those were close to the guns. We had a shotgun. We were shooting one-inch slugs. And we would do is we'd file them down and mutilate the bullets so they would spin and twirl. Some of them shattered in midair. Just a whole bunch of different crazy. We were drilling holes in them to get them to whistle.
That's great.
You know? You know? And just all these really kind of, you know, there's no way to do this. There's just experimenting and trying not to get self-killed.
Right.
And the funny part is I did this like years and years and years ago, except I did something stupid and we were doing a movie called Glory. And I actually went about 200 yards downrange and sat in a ditch as muskets were fired over my head. Because at that time I thought they were little, like little pellets, because you know you see the little
right,
ball bearings.
Yeah.
And then I came back and I found they were one-inch slugs. And I,
as long as they could get up for a pee anyway in the middle of it, like, oh, I'm done for a pee.
I took a little picnic bench with me and I figured, well, you know, if they, it's a BB, you know, it'll hit this and this will stop it. So I came back and they thought, you know, the reenactors who we hired to shoot the guns thought I was totally crazy. And they were like, man, you're just insane. And I'm like, what are you talking about? They're BBs. And the guy goes, show them the BB. And there's they're literally one-inch slugs. They're huge. And I went, oh, don't tell my wife. You know. But no, I mean, it's
So now that you've done this recording shoot for Shoot 'Em Up and you want to use these sounds in the future, do you have them all databased now, like every perspective?
What we're doing is right now we're in the midst of – I mean, it's going to take about a month, to be honest, to go through all of this stuff. And we're going to database it. You know, we're right now getting everybody's recorders together, putting all the material together. And then we're going to go through. And, you know, you think about a gunshot's, what, about a second, maybe 2 seconds with a report? Okay. So we're going to make, you know, hundreds of two-second little snippets. And we'll probably come out with hundreds and hundreds of different sounds. But what you got to remember and Shoot 'Em Up, you know, some guy takes a machine gun and each one of those is specially laid. It's like laying tile. And you have to lay right. Every single Ricco in different space. There's a left one, there's a center one, there's a right one, there's a left center, a center right. And we have to actually sync up every single one of those. It's incredibly labor-intensive.
No, you know, there's a plugin now that does that automatically. Yeah. You just hit process.
Well, you know what? Sometimes what we do is we put them on a keyboard. You put them on a sampler.
Yeah, we've talked about in other podcasts the, you know, creative use of MIDI controllers and stuff, and I've seen you do that. I've seen you play ricochets
well,
and helicopters.
Because you got to sync them. So you sync those, and then you have an offstage, you know, gun battle that happens, and you go, oh, God, I just can't do this anymore. I'm losing my mind. I spent 2 days on 2 minutes, you know. I'm going crazy here. So then a lot of times you put on a keyboard and you just
bring it. A quick way to go.
Well, it's good because you can do a quick pass. I mean, way back, remember in the days like in the late 80s, the Waveframe used to advertise that they had MIDI Foley,
which was
basically just a keyboard sampler, but it then had an EDL list, a timecode list, instead of a MIDI sequencer to record your Foley.
And you also want to be able to phrase it.
But that was cool.
Yeah, absolutely, because you want to go, ba-da-da-da-da-da-dum. But strangely enough, when you finish a phrase, you don't want ba-da-da-da-da-do, you know, unless you speak that way. Huh? Mm-hmm. And so you always want to phrase down something. It is actually more musical than most people realize.
And the thing is, if you can perform it on a keyboard or a MIDI controller of some kind and then just go in and fix it to match picture.
Yeah.
I mean, because I've done that. I've done sound editing to picture things where I've played effects in, like whether it's, you know, footsteps for Foley or right. whatever. You play it in once. It has some kind of organic feel to it. And then you just go and repair
tweak
the performance.
It, yeah. So much quicker just to tweak a couple of MIDI events than actually go around.
And to try to build it that way.
Yeah. But sometimes building the patch takes so much time, you know, you weigh that, you know.
What sampler do you use when you do that?
Lately, I'm using Kontakt now. I've gone through so many different samplers, but the
Kontakt 2?
Kontakt 2. 2.1,
yeah.
1.101,
yeah.
2.1.1.0.
Yeah, you know, I was using Mach 5 a little bit. I was using Kontakt. I was using, you know, Sample Cell years and years.
I loved Sample Cell. That was a happening program.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, it's okay.
I thought you should crash and come back up and do
Sample. I mean, the best one, though, was the Waveframe. I mean, I think the Waveframe still competes with pretty much the samplers now, but...
There's still never been a better sounding sampler than the Waveframe.
No.
But at its worst moment, the Waveframe would run for 10 minutes, then crash, then it took 14 minutes to boot.
But you know what's worse?
That was like, a bad ratio back then.
Now we're looking like, wow, I got to
create a long time ago.
I got to create 32 megs, you know, files. Wow. And at 32 megs, I'm like, why so little?
Someday the archaeologists will go back and get excited about the Waveframe. It was 24-bit in 1986.
Yeah, amazing.
And it had an amazing sound database system that no one has matched yet. I mean, things like SoundMiner and those systems are just now getting to where they
were. Except I do like the cards that went with it were 3 feet by 3 feet.
Well, they were 3 feet by 3 feet, and a 16-meg card was like $30,000.
Yeah.
But
I remember we got like,
hey, it was 1986.
It's like, hey, Waveframe, I got a killer price. It's going to cost me $100,000.
Yeah.
Those weren't the days. So,
so anyway, that was my gun shoot, and then you know we drank a whole pack of water, case of water, and kept drinking. Then we all pretty much had heat exhaustion.
Well, that was very cool.
Oh, thank you.
I will try to get as excited about it as I know Mike would if he was here, because he'd probably say that was awesome or something.
Like really?
Let me take the bazooka out and then the stingers. And
you know, we actually haven't given Mike that much of a hard time. We should, you know, we really should, but you know what? We're out of time.
Oh.
Plus, he is going to be back here soon. And
M-I-C. See you later, Mike.
I can barely see you guys from up here, but I know my seat is still down there. And I'm going to be thrown back in the pen next time, so I want to make sure it's a friendly environment. So let me just remind everybody once again, if you want to be involved in the podcast, if you want to be a guest here, or you have any questions or comments for the panel... the ragtag panel, just send us an email at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. I always go into my game show voice when I say it, but that's just the way it happens naturally. audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Let me thank Scott and Bobby.
Hello. Thank you.
For being here, regular members of the panel. Let me thank Andrew for being our guest.
No problem at all.
And also for engineering the show this evening and editing the show in the future. And
I think we should all thank Dr. Rob, because he's done a brilliant job in the absence of Mike.
Thank you so much.
He can't see us down here, but...
Now, this was a good one. We should have recorded this.
We should put an echo on his voice, though.
Exactly.
This is Rob.
I thought this chair automatically came with echo.
Oh, wow. You know you.
You guys are nuts. So anyway, thank you guys for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio.